Welcome to The Ethics Experts, where we're elevating ethics and compliance and HR to the strategic lever it's supposed to be.
Hello, welcome to The Ethics Experts. If you're new around here, hey, how's it going? And if you're a subscriber, hey, how's it going? I hope you're having an amazing day. See what happens when you subscribe to The Ethics Experts. You get a bonus greeting on every single episode. So please subscribe. We are here today with Wendy. Wendy, how's it going?
Great. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. So this is an episode in our series of Open to Work, where we're shining spotlights on ethics and compliance thought leaders who are looking for new opportunities to put their gifts to work. And I'm excited to get you on and kind of learn some more about you and your viewpoint and how you kind of look at the world.
Well, I'm really excited to be here. Thanks for having me. This is a great opportunity.
Absolutely. So I always like to kind of start these off by talking about how did you get into this game? You know, no one is 7 years old on their grandpa's lap talking about being a compliance officer when they grow up, but a lot of people find it and they find it to really resonate with them. How did you get here?
I had an interesting path in getting here. So when I was 7 years old on my grandfather's knee, I did know that I wanted to be an attorney. So that was kind of always my path and my drive. Then when I started law school a few years ago, I recognized very early on in my law school career that I did not want to litigate. I wanted something different. I didn't want a traditional big law litigation type of career. And so I started kind of looking towards alternative careers. And my first position right out of law school ended up being with an international trade association, where I got to focus on helping the membership comply with the myriad of, you know, alphabet soup of laws that applied to their industry. And I found that really resonated with me to use my skill set, my legal training, to understand what the law says was one thing. But then I took my training and really helped the organizations understand, here's what this means for you. Here's how we can implement this so that you are assuring you are in compliance and doing things not just the right way and the way things should be done, but in compliance. So that's where I found that it really resonated with me. And that's when my career really started to be, I would say, more intentional in looking for roles in a compliance and ethics space, when I started to really see the connection between compliance and ethics. To say compliance is what you need to do to follow the law. Ethics is what you should be doing. And where do those two meet? Because just because you can do something does not mean you should do something. Right. And then working with the business to understand how to get there. I also thought what also resonated with me was working with the business and really understanding the business, not just from a legal perspective, but from an operational perspective, so that I could understand where do they want to go and I can help them get there in a legal, compliant, and ethical manner. And those are not altogether different things. And what I found through that process was that I often, as you know, oftentimes the compliance department is known as the department who always says no, who says we can't do something. And the more I understood the business, the more I became the department of K-N-O-W, no, rather than N-O. Because we would work to figure out, I know where you want to get to, how do we get there in a compliant and ethical fashion? And the more we started having those conversations and that the business understood I was on their side trying to help them get to where they wanted to be, maybe not the exact path that they thought they could take to get there, they started telling themselves no and asking the right questions and saying, oh, I don't think we can do it that way, but I bet we could do it this way. Let's just double check with compliance to be sure. So we got more involved up front in the process. And that's where I really kind of found, to your question, that fire and that passion and that drive to really be in this field.
Yeah. And I think as you build that, what we're kind of talking about is some trust, right? Like you were able to kind of reach across the aisle or reach across the silo and get to know them. And in doing that, they kind of got to know you. And through those conversations and interactions, and we're talking about relationship building, as you can get into their brain and understand what's important to them, they can kind of start to get into your brain and understand what's important to you. And you can hit that panacea tipping point that a lot of people you know, think is just a mirage off into the distance, where that self-regulation starts to happen. And that starts to get into human as a sensor. That's a fully actualized sort of ethical and compliant organization at work, right? Where everyone kind of knows what they need, and they're going to be self-correcting, and they're going to be raising their hands when something feels perhaps, you know, unethical or outside of the compliance boundaries or whatever. I'd love to dive into that some more, because from my standpoint, or I guess from what I see, and it varies obviously, but our profession is pretty young, at least on some level. And what I see is that a lot of people end up getting caught into these kind of pigeonholes where they're not able to shed that moniker, that scarlet letter of being the office of no.
Right.
What, you know, this might be kind of a hard or it might be stupid question. If it is stupid, just act like it's smart. Okay, please. But like, what tipped you off to that? I mean, was it just common sense, or was it like, hey, listen, I need to sort of knock this down and understand this more to build this relationship? Like, was it intentional? Was it kind of just natural? Like, that's just how you would kind of approach the problem. And once you saw that you at some level sort of captured lightning in a bottle, what did you do with it to continue to like accelerate that strategic role that your function could play in your company?
So let me back up. There are no stupid questions. There are only stupid answers.
Well, thank
so,
you.
So
now
all questions
now
are
the
good.
Pressure's on you. Okay.
I know, right? Now it's really on, because, and I don't want to say that there's a secret sauce to this, because there really isn't. You know, I'm happy to share my recipe, if you will, for what happened. And I think it was kind of a combination of all of the things that you kind of mentioned. Part of it was my own curiosity in joining perhaps an industry that I wasn't familiar with. I had questions. I just had that natural curiosity that was, help me understand why you do it this way. Help me understand how we got to this point. And just my own kind of thirst for learning and that kind of curiosity to understand. I think that was a piece of it. Mm-hmm. The fact that oftentimes folks' experiences with lawyers in particular, but also with compliance and ethics folks, they think they're the smartest folks in the room. And if you are the smartest person, yeah. Right, they think they are. And if you are the smartest person in the room, you're in the wrong room. You should always be learning. And we don't know everything, and we shouldn't know everything. So I found that my natural curiosity was one factor, really my own kind of drive to really want to understand that and then do it the right way, I think were a couple of the factors. But I really think kind of where that critical kind of pivot moment was is when the light bulb went off for the business unit, when they realized the more that we have these conversations up front and everyone's clear as kind, right? The more we understand up front what the goal is, and the more questions we get solved up front, the less rework we have to do because we've hit a roadblock or we've reached kind, like we knew what our pivot indicators were in terms of we can't do it this way. We're running into trouble that resulted in us having to take a bunch of steps backwards and redo a lot of that work to build it the correct way, the ethical way, the compliant way. And once that light bulb went off for the business unit to understand that was what we were doing, that made a huge difference. That's when they said, we don't need Wendy at the table, for example, but we need some representative from compliance at the table so that we've got all of these areas represented. And then that had bonus benefits as well, because then they started taking a more critical look and saying, well, if we need compliance at the table, who else do we need at the table? Which obviously helped. And then that builds rapport. And I think the other thing that helps with that relationship and building that rapport is the confidence to say, I don't know. I don't know the answer to your question, but, or maybe, and I'm going to find out and get back to you. And here's how long it's going to take me. You know, that commitment to say, I don't know everything, to show that kind of vulnerability. You don't know everything, but I know how to figure that out. I've either got resources or education or references that I can use to figure that out and help you get to where you want to go. So we might not always have the answers at the table at that time in that meeting, but they knew that I was going to get them for them. So I think that kind of a combination of all of those things really kind of captured that lightning, as you put, in that bottle. But none of that would have been possible without building the relationships, the rapport, and the trust with them at a personal level, at an individual level, so that they understood that I cared, that I was a human being too, that, you know, I'm not just this by the book kind of person and this stickler. You know, I like to have fun too. You know, I like to laugh at work. I like to, you know, in my outside life, I'm a certified jazzercise instructor. So once people kind of start, which is a very different part of your brain that you're using. Yeah. So once people kind of started to realize that I'm a whole person, and that whole person was coming to work with them, that really started to build that trust and that rapport. And then another benefit of that was that once they started saying, and I mentioned this a little bit earlier, but once they started saying, okay, we do need compliance at the table, and that becomes a delegation issue for me, because when you're a compliance department of one in particular, it is, you need Wendy at the table, as opposed to, we need compliance at the table. So it doesn't always have to be me, but that had the benefit, like I mentioned earlier, of not just saying, what other departments maybe do we need at this table? But it also had sort of a diversity, equity, and inclusion benefit, because they said, okay, we've got all these departments represented, but what viewpoints are we missing? You know, and that was a huge moment for for organizations that I've worked with, to say, you know, you only have your experience and your background, or my background as, you know, a white female in this world. Yeah. There's a whole lot of experiences I've never had that we need represented at that table. And so that was really a critical, pivotal moment that had long, immediate, and lasting effect.
Well, the interesting part about, like, doing the right things, which is really what we're talking about. Let me back up. So, you know, you said, hey, I came in and I was able to build trust. And if I hadn't built that trust with a person, then none of these benefits would have happened. I would take sort of a step back before that, is like, if you didn't have humility, you would have never been able to build those relationships. And I think it perhaps goes back to this thing of you shedding, like, hey, I don't need to be the smartest person in the room. I might be in the wrong, you know, I should maybe stop hanging out with preschoolers all the time, because I am the smartest person in the room, right? Like, that humility dropping probably allowed you to kind of make those connection points a lot better, open up those conversations on an authentic level, show that vulnerability, bring some, you know, some three-dimensionality to the mix to show that I am an actual person here. And I think when we can start to shed these facades that are sometimes sort of projected on us from someone who doesn't know what the ins and outs of our organization are, they're just stereotyping it, you can start to melt those walls. But what I'm getting to is that none of this stuff comes in a linear way. It comes in a sort of a parabolic way. Like, the relationship between these factors is parabolic, because you start to get these knock-on effects. And I think you just talked about it. You know, we all get it, right? Diversity and inclusion, big deal. Equity, great. Let's do that. I don't think there's a lot of people that are BSing when they say, at least in our, you know, profession, BSing when they say, yeah, I'm all for that. Like, right. I think conceptually in our hearts and our minds, we it resonates with us. We want to do those things. We want to make the world a better place. With that said, what I found is that there's a lot of difficulty in bringing this sort of concept from the, you know, the ether, you know, from theoretical land into actual practice, where you're actually starting to get these tangible benefits from this theoretical thing that everybody's talking about. And you just presented a phenomenal example of how you can actually begin to realize them, because now it's not forced on anybody. It's, again, organic, coming up from, hey, you know what? Yeah, we have safety here, but we don't have any diversity in this room. So who can we get from safety to incorporate sort of both, you know, two different facets of this diversity of thought that we need to be more effective in sort of achieving our organizational mission? So there's just so many benefits. And I was really struck by the opportunity, to your point, that doing compliance in a strategic way, which you're clearly, you know, highly adept at, just creates so many positive externality opportunities that can really elevate an organization and really change the feel of that place.
You know, one of the things that you said that really resonates is, you know, you're kind of shedding those layers, and we all come to any kind of interaction at work in particular, wearing and holding a lot of armor. And to shed that and come as a whole person is really critical. And one of the other things you said too, that was really interesting to me, because I got some interesting feedback one time in a 360 review, because what you said was, in order to do some of the things that I've done, and build that trust and rapport, you need that measure of humility. And I was once told, your humility will hold you back. And I found that fascinating because I think the exact opposite of that. I think to your point, I think without that piece and saying, hey, I'm human too, you know, I didn't get to where I was, you know, by some wave of a magic wand. Like I worked to get here, you know, and part of that maybe because, you know, I was a first generation college student. No one in my family had ever gone to college before, never mind gotten an advanced degree. So I was kind of like, when I first started college, I didn't even know what office hours were. I'm like, what are they talking about? What are office hours? What does this mean? You know, and not having like my family, they absolutely supported me and were very proud of me, but they didn't, you know, they encouraged me, I should say, but they didn't know always how to give the right support because they'd never had that experience before. So I think that part of holding on to that piece of me has been very, very helpful because now, you know, many years into my career, as I look back and I say, I need to also then remember to send that elevator back down. I need to go back, grab someone and lift them as I continue to rise, right? Like be for someone else what I did not have when I was a first gen college student. So I think that mentoring and, you know, that kind of thing, both within and outside of your organization are critically important too. And, you know, not, and I think those relationships really build themselves the best when they're more organic, rather than kind of a forced mentorship program, but those can have great benefits too. And a lot of these things all kind of end up tying together, you know, when you're looking at them more strategically, like you mentioned.
Yeah. And that's such shocking. I guess it's not shocking, but what bizarre feedback to give someone to say, you know, I don't think that person understands what that word means. Maybe I don't understand. Who knows? But like, I think of humility as like one of the main, one of the big three qualities in a good teammate. You have to be humble. Otherwise, you're an egomaniac or something. And I don't think humility is mutually exclusive with, I don't know, agency or like confidence. Like you're a confident person. You can tell that. You can tell just by being with you and talking to you that, you know, you recognize your own agency and you think that you could, you know, you said yourself, yeah, I can go and figure that out. That's not an arrogance to you. But yeah, I agree. And like, who are you
but
really?
But without that humility, it comes off as arrogance.
100%, 100%, right. Good point. That's a very, very important point, which again, is an impediment to having that authentic connection. That is the breeding ground for the relationship that allows for us to know each other and see the world through each other's eyes and get that true collaboration and build a cohesive culture. Right. Love that. Let's kind of dive in a little bit more. So we talked about kind of like, you know, what you do and how you do it. You know, we've talked about some of your perspective on how you kind of see the world. Let's go one layer deeper. Like you're clearly a passionate person. You're clearly somebody who seems to want to make a difference, but like, what is that why? What is that fuel inside of you at your core that motivates you to do what you do?
I think it's a couple of things. I've always been sort of a lifelong learner with that thirst for knowledge to want to understand why we do the things we do and how we do them. And I think, you know, when I go back and think about, you know, different advice that I've been given either by family, friends, mentors, whatnot, not only was it drilled into my head by my parents to do your homework, which I think still applies today to do your homework, but the other thing that my parents in particular taught me was leave it better than you found it. And I think that that's kind of my drive and a big piece of my motivation in so that in everything that I do, I'm looking to learn something new, to teach something new, because to your point, I've got some experience, I have something to offer, so I can teach something new, maybe help people think about it in a different way for that light bulb moment that kind of, it's their new thing that they've learned, but I helped them get there. And that's really, that's really powerful. And then leaving it better than I found it. Even if it's, you know, I remember one time I was, having lunch with a friend and we both ended up in the ladies' room afterwards and washing our hands and still kind of just that chit chat. And I grabbed some extra paper towels and I was wiping off the sink counter in the ladies' room at this restaurant. And she looks at me and goes, what are you doing? You know, they pay people to do that, right? And I just looked back at her and said, leave it better than you found it. And she like, was speechless to that, you know? So it's like everything you do. And I think that matters, right? Like when you see someone who's maybe in at the executive level or in the C-suite in an organization walking down the corridor and you see them stop and pick up trash that's maybe laying in the corridor or in a hallway, that leaves a message. They are leaving it better than they found it. They're not too good for that, or they're not above that. And that's the kind of person that I want to be, to learn something new, to help people learn something new and teach something new, and to leave it better than I found it.
Well, careful with that humility. That's going to hold you back and you'll be picking up trash forever.
And by the way, I should also lower my expectations.
Tell me some more about that. Yeah.
That was additional feedback that I got.
What is that?
And
mean?
What I don't know.
Feedback.
I don't know what that means. And I, unfortunately, I asked the question, but never got an answer. Like, what does that mean? Like, lower the expectations for myself, for others? Are our goals too high? Are they like too big of stretch goals? Are they unattainable? Like, I don't understand what that means, you know? And so was I being a perfectionist and I need to scale that back? Because that's not a good thing, you know, and that is a tendency that I do fight, but I don't think it's a bad thing to have high expectations for yourself, for your team, for those around you. And I found that really interesting because in my last role, when I was leaving, I told everyone, like, I don't want a party. I don't need or want any of that. Like, that's, don't do that. But what I did say is your parting gift to me, I asked for people to give me three words that they would use to describe me.
Wow.
Because I think seeing yourself through somebody else's eyes is such an interesting, humbling experience.
Yeah.
And it also helps to bring a little bit more self-awareness. Like, I would have never thought that people would use some of these words to describe me.
Yeah. And I bet that was kind of a, what was that like getting all those words? What did that feel like?
It was emotional.
Yeah.
It was uplifting and draining at the same time and powerfully overwhelming. I had one person give me like 20 words and, wow, you know, just nearly brought me to tears. Yeah. I had two different people each gave me one word and then explained why they were choosing that one word. And then in their explanation, they talked about how all of these other words kind of rolled up into this one word that they chose. And one of those people, interestingly, went kind of far beyond the call of duty and prepared a PowerPoint presentation with, wow, like all of these. And so I've obviously kept that and refer, yeah, to that often because it's really, really fascinating to me, kind of how I would describe myself and how they would describe me and where did they meet? So that was just powerfully overwhelming and really eye-opening and humbling to see how my coworkers, my peers, my direct reports, my, you know, people above me in the organization, how they all thought of me. It was really, I highly recommend the experience, but you need to prepare yourself for it.
Yeah, I bet. I bet that's, it's probably a whole like tornado of like emotions and, mm-hmm, you know, stimulus from going through that whole process, right? Wow, that is, that's probably a big eye opener because there's always that gap because you can't, you know, you don't know how you're coming off all the time. You can't know with like 100% confidence, or with 100% certainty on how you're coming off or being portrayed or whatever. That's super interesting. So what from that, where there's some light bulb moments where you're like, oh wow, I need to sort of shave this side of me down, or, oh, I really need to lean into this other thing that I thought was kind of a liability that's actually a really big asset or something. Was there any kind of surprises like that in there?
I don't know that there were any surprises, but I would say that it was interesting to me, the things that people sort of focused on.
Yeah. Okay.
You know, like one of my direct reports, what he focused on, and what he was kind of picking up and perceiving was he meant it in a very positive way, and that's how it was delivered. But to your point, I kind of took that and thought, oh, but to someone who's not a direct report, they might not see it this way.
Got it.
Because one of the things that he said was that, and this was, he was one of the ones who gave me the one word that rolled up. Okay. But one of the roll up words was protective. that I was very protective of my team and certain things about myself in terms of like my personal life and things like, you know, that I'm not going to tell everyone my birthday or whatever, like kind of very things that you hold dear and protect and maybe don't want to bring that to work and how that was coming off. But from kind of everybody else's perspective, like, how is that coming across that I'm protective of my team? Right. And what he meant is that I was protective in that I supported them, in mm-hmm. that I did not let other people take credit for their work, that right. I did not take credit for their work. So what some people might describe as that kind of loyalty and kind of helping to build them up, he found that to be very protective of them, even though, which other folks could kind of look at and say, oh, she's not giving them opportunities. She's protecting them and kind of keeping them down.
Keeping them or something.
Right. Whereas he saw that as, no, you're helping to build us up. You're protecting us in that, wow. you know, like I said, not taking credit for other people's work and things like that. So that was a thing that I thought, okay, I need to kind of be mindful of, you know, how that's coming across, because for my direct reports and people on my team, maybe who didn't report to me directly, it was a good thing. But from an outsider's perspective, it might look a little different.
Yeah.
And then
eye-opener for sure, right?
Yeah. And then kind of the flip of that question, which is, you know, what do you kind of want to lean into? One of the other people, the PowerPoint person, his one word was elevator. And I found that to be very overwhelming and also quite powerful and eye-opening. Because how he described this was how I elevated the work of others around me, like not just pushing them to do better work and more work and work with more integrity, but they wanted to do it. So that kind of, to me, says more from a leadership perspective, I wasn't pulling them along, I was pushing them up.
Yeah.
And then, so elevating the work of others around me, elevating and enhancing the compliance and ethics programs, because when I started, they were very different from when I ended in that organization, you know, just, you know, elevating the knowledge of the programs and that kind of stuff. So, and the, you know, just the quality and the integrity of it. So that word elevator, you know, really resonated across a number of different platforms. And so that to me was really very interesting, but kind of underpinning that was, you know, like I said, all of these other words kind of lifting that up. And at the top of that one was the integrity piece as well. So that shone so clearly for him in my work was really fascinating to me. And yeah, that I thought, that's what I need to lean into.
Yeah, that's, you know, and you also use the word of sending the elevator back down. So you can just tell that it's kind of, you know, it's part of who you are. It's part of your DNA at this point. And I wonder, you know, I was a first generation college as well. And I wonder what that has to do with it. You know, like in that state, if your parents didn't even go to college and you are sort of pioneering and sort of, you know, you're the first one there, that in itself is such a tangible elevation of your family story or something, right? So that just kind of, for me at least, like it kind of becomes a part of who I am. And I want everyone to elevate. Look, we can all climb this thing and so forth. The fact that you've been able to retain that as a sort of defining characteristic, you know, a defining pillar of your, you know, your interaction style with the people that you surround yourself with, you know, professionally and so forth, I think is phenomenal. And it's interesting that it's such a unique breath of fresh air, because I think it's something that everybody wants before they get chewed up and spit out and jaded by this world that we're in. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm.
Well, I think there's probably an aspect of that to me too, but I really fight against that. You know, I really try to maintain that, you know, and say, hey, if, you know, a girl from the east side of St. Paul, Minnesota can grow up and make something of herself with, you know, kind of a lot of the challenges that I had growing up and being that first gen college student. Like I said, you know, my parents absolutely encouraged and supported it in the ways that they knew how and that they could. And I think I've never really forgotten that,
right.
You know, that, and you always want, you know, I think anyway, you know, my parents anyways wanted their kids to do better than they did. Mm-hmm. And that was kind of always their driving force, but to never forget where they came from. So it's almost like the roots and wings kind of thing, where that's what parents want to give their children: roots to keep you grounded and wings to fly.
Oh, I've never heard that.
Oh, really? Yeah. That's one of my favorite kind of images or analogies that I try and remember, that my parents wanted me to grow and learn and fly as far and fast and high as I could, but always keep those roots to keep me grounded and remember where I came from. And, you know, and like I mentioned before, reaching back and knowing that, you know, there's people who don't have that kind of privilege to be able to do that. And how can we serve them and help them?
I love that picture. It's really cool. And that's exactly what it is. And I think that's really probably what we want to do also for the people on our teams that we're helping and stuff like that. We want to keep them sort of grounded and, retain that pesky humility, so to speak, but also elevate and lean into those gifts and so forth. That's a really, I'm still kind of thinking about that picture. I'd like to kind of, you're kind of known in our community as somebody, obviously a thought leader, somebody who's very smart, who cares. And you kind of have this ability, I think, to come into a program very quickly and assess it and see what's going on and what needs to change and so forth. As you think toward like what the ideal job is with that kind of a skill set, kind of talk to me a little bit about like where you think you could, you'd be super interested and passionate about, coming in and making a big dent on whatever world we're talking about, and how that whole thing would work.
So my sort of utopia, my ideal world, in terms of work, is an organization that either does not have a compliance and ethics program, or that has sort of a foundational program and is really ready to embrace and enhance it. Because that's, I think, where all of the things that we've talked about today, the relationship building, all of that stuff, and helping them understand how compliance and ethics is not one person or one department. There may be one person who wears that hat or holds that title, but compliance is everyone's job. Right. If the only person who's compliant is the compliance officer, we've got some issues we need to address. Yeah. So making it part of everyone's job and having it really weave throughout the fabric of the organization and the culture, kind of like I talked about, where you make that shift so that the organization talks about it even when you're not there. They know that it's a thing. And that's kind of my ideal world, where I can help an organization go from wherever they are to get to that point and help to build and enhance that program, because then you're leaving it better than you found it. Regardless of how long you stay, you get to really have that kind of, you can see and feel what you've helped to build and know that they're going to be better off because of some of the things that you were able to contribute. And it's not about a legacy. It's about making that organization better, because those are going to be lasting effects where people are going to remember that whether you're at the table or not.
I like, tell me a little bit more about what you mean. It's not about a legacy. It's about this bigger thing.
Well, I think a lot of times when folks get into positions where they're building or creating something, they want to leave that mark. They want people to know, I did that. That's ego. Mine. Yeah. I created that, that ego aspect of it. For me, I don't care if you don't remember my name. What I care about is that you maintain that continuous improvement of your ethics and compliance program, that you're constantly looking at it and doing this kind of virtuous cycle of, we created this thing, it didn't super work great, so we made it better, we enhanced it, and we keep looking to see how can we improve, whether that's in product development, whether it's in a new outreach to consumers or customers in a business-to-business format. You're always looking to improve. How can we do this better, more efficiently, more ethically? And that's the kind of thing that's going to benefit the organization going forward, not necessarily an individual who can say, I built that. That's mine. That's my trademark.
My name on that building. Yeah.
Yeah.
So where can people find you? Listen, like wherever you land, you're going to crush it. Like wherever you land, they're going to be very lucky to have you, because you're just someone who's going to be able to meet that company where they're at and build toward the world-class program that is probably in their sights, and really make it constructive along the way, not like they're walking up a mountain with a rock in their boot because now they're kicking on their compliance function. That's not how it should feel. It should feel like it's an enabler. It's a way to elevate. It's a way to run faster because I know where the lines on the road are. That's the role we can play. And you're just someone who's an absolute powerhouse, and I'm just lucky to get you on here to pick your brain for a little bit. Thank you so much for joining us. How can people find you, and how can people learn more about you?
Well, that is just the loveliest thing to say. You've just made my day. So thank you. So I'm on LinkedIn. You can find me at Wendy Badger on LinkedIn. I'm probably wearing this exact top, in fact, in my profile picture. But no judgment, right? So yeah, I'm on LinkedIn as Wendy Badger, or linkedin.com/in/Wendy Badger. Happy to help answer questions or connect people with other people or with resources, or just generally kind of talk shop in terms of ethics and compliance. Hopefully it's kind of come across that I kind of like this stuff a little bit. But again, thank you so much for having me. This has been a great discussion. You know, I love talking about this kind of stuff, and you've had really great and insightful questions that have really kind of caused me to sit back and think about kind of how can I best articulate what that means for me and what that drive is for me. So thank you for a great conversation.
Absolutely. Thank you so much. See you guys next time.